One evening while she was eating at a Vietnamese restaurant in New York City with her friend Matt, Elizabeth Greenwood, a 27-year-old creative writing teacher at Columbia University, began to complain about her burdensome student loan debt. Matt asked her if she thought about faking her death and starting over, and she says that what at first seemed like a joke became an obsession. Her thoughts and actions relating to the possibility of committing suicide have led her to her first book, Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death and Fraud. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it brings Elizabeth Greenwood to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks so much for having me.
You say that you have student debt in the bloated six figures. That's on top of the $60,000 you took out for your undergraduate degree?
That's all together. That's the sum total.
When did declaring personal bankruptcy stop being an option for dealing with student loan debt?
I'm not sure if it was ever an option. I know it's certainly not now.
Are death or a lifetime of struggling to make loan payments the only options available?
Well, or go off the grid.
Well, you could disappear.
You can disappear.
You could and assume a new name, can't
you? That's exactly right. And there have been stories about recent graduates who just flee to different countries. You definitely do not have to fake your death to flee student loan debt or any other kind. That's one of the things I discovered in researching this book, that there is a big difference between disappearing, simply vaporizing, and faking your death, which usually requires some kind of elaborate accident hoax scenario.
And my favorite excuse is amnesia.
That's
how
right.
How common is amnesia in the real world?
I'm not sure how common it is in the real world, but it is certainly an excuse that some of our listeners might recall on the TV show Breaking Bad, the character Walter White gives when he tries to escape some of his criminal misdealings. And it's an excuse that John Darwin, who I interviewed for my book, who's very well known in the UK as the legendary canoe man, he staged his death in a kayaking accident in 2002, and then he later, nearly 6 years later, turned himself in at a London police station, claiming amnesia, not being able to account for events since before the year 2000, when in fact he had actually acquired a passport, an authentic UK passport, in the name of a person, John Jones, who was born around the same time as him, but died in infancy. And he traveled to a dozen different countries on this passport and bought property in Panama and actually lived for some time next door to his own home.
Isn't it illegal to get documents based on the fact of you faked your death?
Well, that's a great question. So faking your death in and of itself.
Death certificate is another
right.
example?
Yeah. Faking your death in and of itself is not a crime, but the related ancillary crimes are indeed. I got my own death certificate, but I never filed it. I think if I were to attempt to file it, that would in fact be illegal.
How authentic does it look?
It's pretty good. One of the...
You have it in the book.
I do have it in my book. One of the people that I interviewed at length and who's the subject of the second chapter of my book, a man by the name of Steve Rombaum, who is a world-renowned private investigator, he does a lot of overseas death fraud cases. So he is always authenticating different documents. And he held it up and looked at it. He said, this is good. You know, this is about 90-95% of the way there. It didn't pass his sniff test, but he said, you know, depending on where, if I were to file it, it would likely get through, depending on which county.
You started talking to people like Steve Rombaum and others, Frank Ahern, for example, because you took this seriously for a little while.
Well, I never was really going to personally fake my own death. I wanted to, as a personal experiment, kind of see how far I could get. And I sought out experts like Frank Ahern, who's a privacy consultant and for a while specialized in helping people disappear. And people like Steve
Rombaum. He wrote a book, didn't he?
He did. It's called
How to Disappear.
That's exactly right. Yes. So he has a lot of great tips in there. I wanted to learn from them what it would really take and what some of the pitfalls and mistakes people make to see really how you could pull it off, or you do.
Did you begin it by Googling faking your death?
That's exactly right. The very sophisticated research tool, Google. That was my first step, fake your own death. And Frank is actually one of the first people who pops up in that search. He's never helped anyone fake their deaths, but he has spoken about it widely and has written about it. He doesn't recommend it because he says it's actually not a very effective method of disappearing.
Is there an industry devoted to faking deaths?
There is. It's kind of piecemeal, and it depends on what kind of pseudocide you're trying to pull off. So, for example, if you want to commit life insurance fraud overseas, in many countries you can go and buy what is known as a death kit on the black market from your local fixers, and that will include all the documentation you would need to provide to an insurance company.
What about a body?
You can buy bodies in certain countries. I've always heard, and this is one of the reasons why I traveled there for my book, in the Philippines, there are morgues where they will take in unidentified bodies and hold them for as long as it takes. And a lot of fraudsters will go into these morgues, purchase these bodies, and then immediately cremate them. Because part of the problem with faking your death, if you're trying to claim life insurance money, is providing a body. Without a body, you'll have to wait 7 years. So this kind of expedites the process.
Don't red flags go off when you take out an insurance policy for millions of dollars and then suddenly die?
That's exactly right. There, for most life insurance companies, if you have increased your coverage significantly within 2 years and you die, that automatically will get investigated.
Now, you went to the Philippines,
didn't
you?
Yes.
Not because you were thinking of faking your death there and finding a body?
I knew I wanted to go to the Philippines because, like I said, it's one of these places that had come up again and again in my research where they do have a very robust infrastructure to carry out these frauds. So I had been very intrigued, and I worked with some great guys there who brought me around and who helped me acquire my death certificate there.
Wouldn't it be harder to fake your death now than in the past? Because as we discover when we open up our computers, there are online retailers who seem to know almost everything about our lives, send us ads for things that we've been thinking about buying without ever telling anyone. It's hard to just disappear without a trace.
That's exactly right. And because of that constant surveillance and, you know, whether it's, you know, advertisers or the NSA or just, you know, checking into places on Facebook, it really does seem that much more impossible. And that's why I really wanted to look into this topic so much more. What I found to answer the kind of technology question is that the reason why most people get caught across time from historical cases I looked at going back to the 16, 1700s, it's really because people have a very hard time cutting ties with loved ones, with family, and they always try to reach out. And now there's just that many more ways to do it. So what I found is that it's really more of a human nature problem, and the technology today just enables us more to make those connections.
And you made a list of lessons about faking your death in case people are considering seriously. Don't come back, not for your wife, not for your girlfriend, not for your kids. If you fake your death, don't do it at sea. Go for a hike at sea, because unless a body washes up, eventually it gets very suspicious.
Yeah, I think that the kind of layman's idea that we have about if you were to fake your own death, everyone's go-to is stage a drowning, fall off a boat in the middle of the ocean, then there's no body, no problem. Actually, most bodies do end up being recovered eventually. If not in a day, 2 days, they usually do in a week, and sometimes in a week or so. And sometimes, if there's one case, a man named Seth Ferranti, he staged his death because he was facing jail time for drug trafficking, and he staged his death making it look like he plunged into a reservoir, and they actually dragged it looking for the body, and as you can imagine, none ever turned up. So water accidents actually raise red flags in the eyes of law enforcement.
My guest is Elizabeth Greenwood. Her book, Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of death fraud. Another story you tell is of a man named Sam Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He also was trying to avoid going to jail?
That's right. So in 2008, Sam Israel, he was the head of the Bayou Hedge Fund, and he had gotten involved in a pretty big what he saw as a conspiracy, what law enforcement saw as a Ponzi scheme, and he absconded with $500 million of investor money. So he was trying to avoid jail time. There's actually a great book written just about Sam called Octopus by Guy Lawson, if people are interested in learning more about Sam. The way he staged his death is that he made it appear as if he'd committed suicide by jumping off the Bear Mountain Bridge up by West Point. He left a note on the windshield of his car, "Suicide is painless," written in pollen. But he actually jumped off the bridge. The amazing thing is that he was able to catch himself in construction nets that were hanging below. And hand over hand, he crawled out of this net and made it to the embankment on the river and scrambled up and made his getaway in an RV where he lived for a few weeks. He saw himself on America's Most Wanted while he was living out of this RV. And he eventually turned himself in to a police station not much longer after that.
And Sam and Frank Ahern, who we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. got involved in this case. He's the co-author of a book I said earlier, How to Disappear. Actually, I love the subtitle, Erase Your Digital Footprint, Leave False Trails, and Vanish Without a Trace. Mm-hmm. That book was published after it was published, it hit the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list years later, mm-hmm. and it sold over 150 copies a week. Doesn't that suggest that a lot of people are thinking of trying to start over?
I think so. And I think, you know, maybe like me, even if people aren't actively, pursuing it and really laying down the groundwork to live a second life, I think that the idea is very intriguing and it provides a lot of fodder for daydreaming and, you know, maybe even just going through the process of buying that book and thinking about how you do it with Frank's help is very cathartic to people.
Didn't you speak to Sam Israel?
Yes, I did. Sam and I have a very robust email correspondence. He is in Butner Federal Prison. So we talk quite a bit still. He's a hilarious person.
Interestingly, his fraud only added 2 years to his sentence.
That's right. There is no law called faking your own death. So because Sam had, skipped his jail sentence, he was charged with an additional 2 years for fleeing with obstruction of justice.
In another chapter called How to Be Found, you tell the story of Hector Mendoza mm-hmm. and his attempt to fake his own death. What happened in his life that made him want to commit suicide?
So Hector Mendoza had been charged with a series of crimes stateside. He's Filipino-American, including human trafficking. That's one thing I realized in doing this research is that people who actually go through with faking their deaths are usually facing some far more pressing criminal issues than student loan debt.
Well, a lot of people wanted him to disappear.
Yeah, that is what it sounds like. He had successfully gotten to the Philippines and set up a very elaborate false funeral, replete with the fake body and all these things. I guess he'd become kind of a pain in the butt to his co-conspirators in the Philippines. So they turned on him and actually were ready to give him up to the investigators who were pursuing his case.
One thing is for sure, as you write, faking your death is comedic gold. You found stories of a man who was in deep real estate debt, pedaling away in a kayak in the northern coast of England, and as you mentioned, and he was presumed to have drowned, only to have a photo of him in a Panamanian real estate office emerge 5 years later.
Yes.
There was a money manager who staged a plane crash but mm-hmm. then made the mistake of inadvertently leading the feds to the campsite where he was holed up. It seems that while en route, he discarded a road atlas with several pages torn out of it. And, of course, all they had to do is buy the road atlas
That's
and
exactly
see
right.
what was on those pages. So,
yeah, not always the work of criminal masterminds here. Usually when people are faking their deaths, like actually doing it, they're in this very fight or flight response. mindset where they're not really thinking through all the way the consequences of their actions, and that does lead to some pretty hilarious scenarios occasionally.
Do some people do this simply because they feel their life is dull, not because they've committed a crime or they're trying to escape debt or trying to get insurance money?
You know, I was always hoping to find that person, just your average Joe who was kind of disenchanted with his or her life and really went through with it and made a new one. Sadly, I have not met that person yet. The people in my book who faked their deaths all got caught or turned themselves in. But that's the inherent paradox with pseudocide, is the cases that are successful, we don't know about. We just presume them dead. So I hope kind of that there are some average people out there who did it just out of boredom.
Some of your other advice is, in your new life, commit to a disguise for your new identity, but use your real first name.
That's right. So that is advice that I got from John Darwin, the canoe man. Again, he got his identification in the name of John Jones. And he was very conscientious about doing that. When you've been called the same, your name, for however many decades of your life, when you decide to do this, it's just second nature to respond to that if someone shouts it out in a bar or anywhere. So same first name is a must.
Don't Google yourself.
Don't.
Because people will find you if you Google yourself?
So that comes from a case of Patrick McDermott, who was the ex-boyfriend of Olivia Newton-John. He was facing some back child support charges, and he staged his death in Puerto Vallarta in a fishing boat accident. And some investigators from the TV show Dateline didn't believe this all the way. So what they did was they set up a website, something to the effect of findpatrickmcdermott.com, and they noticed that there was a cluster of centralized IP addresses all logging on from the same place. And it was Patrick McDermott trying to kind of stay ahead of the trail. So he led investigators right to where he was from his digital footprint.
And you also say, don't drive a car, use public transportation.
Cars get people caught all the time.
Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud is Elizabeth Greenwood's first book, but I suspect not your last.
I hope you're right.
And it is published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks, Leonard. My pleasure.